This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Bloomington City Manager Tim Gleason says he hopes a council member promised to make lives of new council members a living hell is just reaction to allies losing.
I'm hoping that Alderwoman Carrillo comes to the table or to the dais in May, and again, we've got work to do here at the city.
Gleason says you can talk about social agendas, but nuts and bolts come first. Plus, the medical director at OSF St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington says pulling the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is the right move for now. And Bloomington's mayor talks about a water shutoff moratorium. That and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for Sound Ideas comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. With a practice featuring five doctors, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient and helps you keep hearing the most important sounds of your life. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. Governor J.B. Pritzker's administration says it's following federal guidelines to temporarily stop administering the Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine out of an abundance of caution. Hannah Meisel has more.
Federal authorities are investigating whether there's a causal link between the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and six known cases of blood clotting out of nearly 7 million doses given in the U.S. The Centers for Disease Control and Food and Drug Administration on Tuesday morning recommended states pause giving the one-dose vaccine. The Illinois Department of Public Health is asking vaccine providers to honor appointments for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, but instead give the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines if possible. The state says Moderna and Pfizer make up the vast majority of on-hand vaccine doses in Illinois anyway. Out of nearly 485,000 doses the state is supposed to receive next week, only about 1% were Johnson & Johnson. I'm Hannah Meisel.
In McLean County, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine has been used mostly for college students and in rural areas. The McLean County Health Department says it will switch to the Pfizer vaccine for this week's clinic on the Illinois State University campus. A vaccine clinic scheduled for Illinois Wesleyan University has been postponed. All other McLean County Health Department clinics will continue as planned because the Johnson & Johnson vaccine was not slated for distribution at any of those. Three more McLean County residents have died from COVID-19 complications. All three were men. They include one in his 60s and one in his 70s who did not live in long-term care facilities, and another in his 90s who did. Health officials report 53 new coronavirus cases as the county's testing positivity rate rose to 5.7%. The Brazilian variant of the coronavirus is becoming more common in central Illinois. That's according to Reditus Laboratory CEO Dr. Aaron Rossi. The company processes thousands of COVID tests across the state.
In regards to the P1 or Brazilian variant that is vaccine resistant, and it's been shown to be more pathogenic, so severity of the condition, and once you're infected, it has been shown to be worse as well.
Out of 321 randomly selected positive samples tested last week, Rossi says 16 were the so-called P1 variant. Many were from central Illinois, 7 from Tazewell, 6 from Peoria, 1 from McLean, and 1 from Knox County. Health officials believe many of those cases are tied to travel instead of community spread. Bloomington Mayor-elect Mboka Mulambwe says Jen Carrillo should face formal admonishment for her post-election comments. Carrillo's preferred council candidates lost last week. The council member said she would spend the next 2 years making life a, quote, living hell for the winners, who she called authoritarians. Mulambwe says he will ask city staff to draft something the council can use to formally express its disapproval of those comments.
If we do not act, it would amount to a tacit approval of the behavior and the comments.
Carrillo took issue with Mulambwe's comment that young people look up to them.
I'm quite fine with the example that I'm setting for young people in the community. So thank you for your concern.
Mulambwe says he'd also like to explore whether to establish a code of conduct for council members to set expectations. The Bloomington City Council has formalized a partnership with other local entities to cement the area as a technology hub. Deputy City Manager Billy Tyus says so far, Illinois State and Illinois Wesleyan Universities and the Town of Normal are in the group.
Sometime now, there have been a number of different entities who have been working together really to build upon the hotbed of innovation that we currently exist as.
Tyus says the groups aim to harness 21st century town gown innovations to attract and retain talent in the community. He points to electric automaker Rivian and major insurers shaping how the nation handles self-driving cars as other key players in the new initiative. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. BNA's educational video series, Hear My Story, continues with local patient Gina Barnhart.
The first time I tried hearing aids, it was too overwhelming. But then once I didn't have them, then it was kind of like, oh, I kind of miss hearing some of those sounds.
Gina's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's Public Media. The chief medical officer at OSF St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington says the federal government made the correct move to pause use of the Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine as it investigates rare cases of blood clots. Dr. Paul Peterson tells Eric Stock he doesn't think taking the one-dose vaccine offline temporarily will hurt vaccination efforts much.
You know, there's already been about 6.8 million doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine being administered. I don't know that it's going to put that much of a hold or a delay on the vaccination effort that is ongoing within the United States. Certainly, the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines appear to be as safe as they have been. And I think that's a very reasonable thing to continue with. I don't think our listening population and community should be scared of them at all at this point. I think they are an excellent way to mitigate this disease.
Do you think, however, this does raise concerns about vaccine hesitancy, particularly the Johnson & Johnson vaccine that was used specifically toward populations that were less likely to get the vaccine in the first place, including minority populations, college students, rural residents?
The Johnson & Johnson vaccine as a one-shot vaccine is certainly easier for that group, but I don't think it should. Change vaccine hesitancy at all. I don't think it should enhance that. I think the vaccine hesitancy about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is certainly there, but not about the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines.
Do you think then that when they give the all clear, assuming that happens at some point, that the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is fine, are they going to have a problem getting it into arms? Are people not going to want to take it at that point?
That I can't tell. You know, I think that raises some concern, and it's too early to know what recommendation, if any, the CDC and FDA make about that. And I think we have to see what they say as time goes forward.
So what do we know about how the blood clotting occurs from this vaccine?
Well, we don't know for sure. All we know is occurrence. We don't know cause. This disease is not unique to this vaccine. This disease occurs in the population that's concerning today. And in fact, it occurs with perhaps a little bit more frequency than we're seeing with this vaccine. Central venous thrombosis occurs most frequently in women under the age of 50. It occurs somewhere between 5 and 15 people per million. This, from the vaccine point of view, this is 6 people in 6 million. So it's occurring actually with less frequency than in the general population. But it's occurring in the context of having gotten a vaccine within the past 2 weeks. So that is, I'm sure, where the concern is being raised.
And the six severe cases, I understand, are all involving women. So yep. It's the same population group, all under age 50. What should a patient look for if they've already got the vaccine? And in this case, in the cases of the six, they experience symptoms within 6 to 13 days. What should they be looking for? What should they be thinking about?
Certainly a headache that doesn't resolve with simple measures, Tylenol. Is not resolving. Visual disturbance associated with headache. Any symptoms of altered level of consciousness, more confusion. Any of those three things or two or three of them occurring together, certainly that person needs to get to the emergency room, as they should anyway, should this occur, even if they hadn't had a vaccine within the past 14 days, but certainly if they have had.
That's Paul Peterson, Chief Medical Officer at OSF St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington. The McLean County Health Department says it has distributed about 3,500 Johnson & Johnson vaccines so far. And again, the Health Department's vaccination clinic for Thursday at Illinois State University is still on, though the department plans to use its supply of two-dose vaccines instead.
This is Sound Ideas on WGLT. Thanks for joining us this evening. I'm Eric Stock with Melissa Liebert, and we're taking a quick break to talk about Spring Fund Drive. You can help fund this award-winning program right now with your contribution at WGLT.org.
Every day, the WGLT Newsroom brings you the stories that help you understand the day's news. Maybe you turn to WGLT for vaccination information, to meet the recent candidates running for office, or for election night results. There are so many reasons you turn to WGLT for credible, fact-based news, and WGLT is always there for you. Now, we need you to be there for us with your financial support. Make a gift and fund your local news source at WGLT.org.
Sound Ideas brings you in-depth stories about health, community events, and newsmakers you can't hear anywhere else. When you donate at WGLT.org, your contribution powers Sound Ideas, the lead-off podcast, and a local newsroom of award-winning journalists. Quality news and programming is very worthy of your financial support, so donate at WGLT.org. Throughout the last year, we've heard from so many of you that WGLT is your go-to source for news and programming. We get it. Public media is powerful. And your financial support provides the power we need to keep the news and programming coming. Our community right here in McLean County provides the largest share of our funding, money that fuels our editorial independence.
Unfortunately, the pandemic has created financial challenges for Central Illinois organizations, which is a major component of our community support. So now is the time to step up with your individual financial support at WGLT.org and pay for the news and programming that powers your day. You and your financial contribution at any amount will be a part of something bigger, a vital community that supports public media.
On our website, you can make a one-time gift or set up an ongoing monthly donation. Whatever works for your budget works for us. What matters is that you contribute. So make your gift right now at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. Bloomington City Manager Tim Gleason will have three new city council members to break in next month following the municipal election. Gleason tells Eric Stock he was encouraged to see voters show their support for focus on infrastructure and other basic services.
Yeah, I really like what I heard, from the community. I think the community's paying attention to the growth and the opportunities that we have, even amidst COVID. It's unreal. And I think the only downstate community that rivals us is Champaign-Urbana. And that's not to say that there has not been a COVID financial impact, because there has been. But we have weathered this storm thanks almost entirely to the community itself and the employers in the community for the results that we've seen.
Council members, of course, have different agendas, different priorities. After the election, Councilmember Jen Carrillo had said that newly elected members, Sheila Montney and Nick Becker, are, quote, dangerous authoritarians. Carrillo says she plans to make the next 2 years on the council for them a, quote, living hell. How will you and the mayor-elect, Mel Lombway, look to deal with what's a pretty clear division on the council?
Well, I think that those might have been quick responses, at the end of an election period where the outcome might not have gone her way. I'm hoping that Alderwoman Carrillo, comes to the table or to the dais in May. And again, we've got work to do here at the city. And while social agendas might be something that everybody's conscious of, and can be discussed at the local level, at the end of the day, it truly is the nuts and bolts that play out at the local level. And as far as managing that, that's outside of what I've been hired to do. The new mayor and the council will take care of trying to get the council to work together, and I'll do what I'm asked.
Do you not anticipate this lingering beyond the swearing in and into the spring and summer?
No, I don't necessarily, Eric, have a prediction on that. I just know that I've got a city to run. And I'm the one employee of that elected body, and I will let them take care of themselves, and I'll take care of the city.
So the city will have only one council member now who's been there for a full term, and that's Jamie Mathey. Sure, the new council members bring fresh ideas and new perspectives, but there is a loss of institutional knowledge there. How much of a challenge or concern is that, if any?
I'm going to say it's an exciting time. You know, I'm one of these people that's wired in such a way that you find the opportunities in any given situation, whether you asked for it, planned for it, or didn't. And it is true. I mean, with Mayor-elect Milwaukee and with Alderman Mathey, we will have 8 elected officials of the 10 total that are in their first term. And it's exciting. And I know that the elected officials that are outgoing, and even the ones that left 2 years ago, they are a phone call away if any of the current council members, need any help or advice.
The McLean County Health Department has been using the arena as a mass vaccination site. When does the city start to look at using it for its initial purpose again, for booking events, concerts, and the like? And is there some sort of target date where you want to put actual fans in the stands at events there?
We're anxious to do that. We're anxious to get the arena used for community events. But we also know that vaccinating our community, our region, is the priority. So there is no end date, no target date. Once the county health department, and talk to Camille Rodriguez, the administrator, often, and once they tell us that they're going to be packing up, we're going to turn this thing into hopefully community events. With vaccinations complete or nearly complete, and the allowance to go back to those kinds of venues in the community. So we're excited, but no end date, because truly the number one priority is vaccinating the region.
Are you still in a holding pattern then in that sense? Because once you're all clear to open it up and the vaccines are done, you're not going to be able to bring in an act tomorrow night. So is there any advance time to kind of prep for that sort of thing, or do you have to wait?
We definitely are working on that right now. We have some sporting clubs that are interested in having more of a presence at the arena, talking with them. And then also know that we're exploring different kinds of music and entertainment events. And you're right, though, Eric. If we were told it's going to end July 1st, we're not going to have a venue there July 2nd, at least on a regional level. But we do have some homegrown talent that might be able to pop something like that into that venue fairly quick. So trying to keep our options open, but again, the vaccination's number one priority.
That's Bloomington City Manager Tim Gleason with Eric Stock. Gleason says he will poll the new council to see when they would feel comfortable holding city council meetings in person again. This is the Spring Fun Drive on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org, and you can make a contribution to keep Sound Ideas on the air and the other news that you listen to day in and day out at WGLT.org. Bloomington residents who are struggling to pay their water bills don't have to worry about getting shut off, at least for now. In a 5-4 vote, the council voted against a proposal to once again begin water shutoffs for non-payment of bills. That's been in place because of the pandemic. In this interview with Ryan Denham, Mayor Terry Renner says staying with the moratorium was a prudent decision, even if the city is more than $1 million behind on collecting payments.
I could see why we would go in either direction. The city manager was not going to be administering this in a draconian way, but it does seem to me that this is a time where we don't want to add an extra burden. And as Councilwoman Molly Ward put it, we're don't pretend that we're at the end of this. We still have a long way to go. And so I think that that was a prudent decision. It doesn't mean that in 60 days, 90 days, that this won't be revisited. But at this point, I think that was a prudent, especially since if we might decide to, and it wouldn't be while I'm mayor, but use some of the $14 million to defray some of the expenses. That's part of what the money is supposed to be for, is to try to eliminate some of the, or reduce, mitigate some of the negative consequences surrounding COVID.
You know, we've heard from some landlords in the past couple of weeks who say that this is kind of putting them in a tight spot because they're, you know, ultimately becoming stuck with these unpaid bills from their tenants. What do you make of that argument?
Well, I think it's a legitimate one, but it is something, frankly, that you see in the entire state of Illinois. It's not something that, I mean, every place, you're responsible if you're a landlord and you're making a profit there, because we don't want to be in the business of having to track people down. No municipality in the state of Illinois wants to be in the business of tracking people down for non-payment of water bills. So it essentially goes to the owner of the property. They're the default person who's responsible for that.
Well, let's pivot over to a different topic. Over at the county board, actually, the county board's executive committee last night delayed a decision on whether to kick in the $65,000 that they're looking at for a joint recycling drop-off program alongside your city and the town of Normal. This is something that a separate county panel has already rejected once. If the county government does not buy into this recycling drop-off program, do you think that the city, you know, should kick in some extra money along with the town, presumably, to keep it alive?
I think the program needs to stay alive. I don't know. We'll see what happens with the county. I think it's a very, very short-sighted decision, and they do have a responsibility. There are people who, outside the corporate limits of Bloomington and Normal, who don't pay our taxes. At least they may pay some if they buy gas here or buy something at store, but they're not residents who are tax-paying residents here. And I think that it's very short-sighted on their part. We have to keep something like this alive, and I don't know how we can work that out, but certainly I look forward to however many days I have left working with our intergovernmental neighbors, and I'm sure the new mayor and council will do as well.
Can you speak to why it's important to keep it alive? Can you speak to its utility?
The biggest issues, of course, are aesthetics and environmental issues. If people start dumping things, this is going to be a serious problem. And now, maybe the county doesn't worry about it because they've got almost 1,200 square miles of terrain, but we're 28 square miles in Bloomington and 17 square miles in Normal, and I don't think that that's something that we want. And it's also, again, environmentally responsible. So I would certainly urge the county to step up to the plate and do what's right.
And the last movement last night, Mayor-elect Mboka Milamwe said he was looking for a way for the city council to formally express its disapproval of Councilmember Jen Carrillo's comments after the election. For those who don't remember, she called new members Nick Becker and Sheila Montney authoritarians and that she planned to make their lives a living hell for the next 2 years. Do you think the council should censure her or do something similar?
First of all, let me say, when I heard that, I was really shocked. And nobody is suggesting that you put your own political opinions or sacrifice those or sacrifice your values. But at the local level, we have to do things. We can't be in a situation that we begin to go down the scorched earth policies and practices that we see at the state and federal level. And the vast majority of things that we deal with don't have a strong ideological cast to it. And so if you want to be productive, you want to make things happen in your community, you want to accomplish something, that's important. That's governing. It's important to move beyond the election phase. The election is over. The results are what they are. We need to move forward with governing. And that's why if the council decides that they want to move to some sort of rebuke, again, obviously I'm going to chair the meeting if it happens while I'm still mayor, but I think that that's not inappropriate. I think the censure is again, trying to punish somebody locally for stuff that is a fraction of what we see at the state and national level. It's not an excuse, but it's an explanation.
Now, I think it was about 6 years ago, but 5 years ago maybe, I think you were on the receiving end of a city council rebuke. Did it resonate with you? Did you just kind of brush it off?
Of course, you don't brush something like that off unless you're really a narcissist. I mean, it's also something different. If you're reacting to some blogger who doesn't even live in your city, that's different from suggesting you're going to trash your colleagues over the next 2 years. So I think they're qualitatively different. But yeah, there are certain things, especially if you apologize. It's usually hard to beat up on somebody who's apologized. I did apologize, but that didn't stop the process. Councilmember Carrillo has not apologized, and I don't really expect that she will. I think I take it at her word when she says that she won't. But yeah, I would assume that you would be self-reflective about something like that. My personality would certainly do that. If it's criticism that's so far over the top and absurd that I get every day, that's different from criticism of people who are legitimately disappointed or upset with something that I or somebody else has done.
That's Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner speaking with Ryan Denham. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's public media, and you can make a contribution during WGLT's Spring Fund Drive at WGLT.org.